Skywalker had Obi-Wan Kenobi. Frodo and Bilbo had Gandalf. But what about you? Who is your mentor? If you're like most of us, our parents, while they mean well, didn't really set us up for success in this world. In fact, most of them wouldn't even be able to based on how fast the world is changing. And it leads to this question, am I on the right path? What should I be doing? No matter if you're in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, and so on, we all ask, is this what I should be doing? And today, I am so excited for this guest because he is a mentor of mine. He is someone who helped me find direction in my life because I'm like everybody else. I've got no special talents, no special skills. I need direction. I need coaching. I need mentors just like everyone else. And he's the guy who got me, who really kickstarted the idea that I could be successful as a speaker. But it goes beyond that. He is a life coach. He is one of the most well-known people in the fitness industry. And even if you're not in the fitness industry, you're going to hear some life lessons that I've never heard anyone else talk about. I'm talking Tony Robbins. I'm talking Brendan Burchard. Or doesn't matter who your personal development guru is. I've never heard anybody break things down the way today's guest does. His name is Thomas Plummer, and we're going to be going over basically the biggest mistakes that you're making that could potentially cause you to ruin your life, and how to stay ahead in a rapidly changing world. Because although I don't remember asking Tom if I knew his age, he's up there. He's been doing this for a while. He understands, and he's coached so many people to success that he's gone beyond fitness. He's gone beyond business. He's moved to this place where he helps people get clarity. He helps people fix their lives, not just their business. And you're going to learn the biggest mistakes that you're making, as well as how to get back on track. And Tom has done that for me. He is such an amazing guy. And he's here today not to plug anything like a lot of my guests who come on this show. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. They're amazing guests and they're selling information that's part of their business and they come on podcasts to share. But Tom is here because he wants to help people. He wants to help people become more successful. So enjoy the interview. And last thing, I want to tell you about a webinar that I'm doing this week. I know I talk a lot about the principles of exercise, and I mentioned a few abstract or maybe a lot of abstract concepts. And in this webinar, I'm going to show you visually. It's not just going to be me talking and now you just get to see my face. No, this is going to be a legit seminar, and I want you to go to it. I want you to be on it. I want you to ask questions. I want you to ultimately get better results from your exercise program. And when you understand the principles that I'm going to share with you in this webinar, when you see them visually, you will start, and most importantly, apply them. You will start to get better results from whatever program you're doing. So go to legendarylifepodcast.com. You will see on the very top, the bar at the top, where to sign up. Go there, check it out. But for now, enjoy the interview with Thomas Plummer. Thomas Plummer, welcome to the Legendary Life Show.
Thank you, man. Good to have you. Thank you very much for having me on today. I'm excited about it.
Me too. And I'm excited because not only have you been in the fitness business for over 30 years and you speak all over the world, you give workshops worldwide, you've authored 6 books on the business of fitness, and several of which are best-selling books in the industry for over 12 years. But I had the pleasure of meeting you in person and taking your speaking course. So it's going to be fun to connect again.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. We got a lot of stuff. Lots happened since I've seen you last. So it's, I've been in a number of more countries. We got clients now just everywhere, which is very fun. Very flattering to do that. Added a few more books to the pile. We're looking at about 9 books now in that stack. And so that's very exciting. But it's, just all good stuff. So I've been busy, still out there. She's seeing, we'll probably be in front of somewhere maybe 10,000 people this year by the time I hit all the seminars and hit worldwide. So it's been a good run the last couple of years since I've seen you. I have been busy.
That is awesome to hear. And I want to dive into that too, because some people are not doing well in spite of all the opportunities that exist. But before we go on, I know you, people from the fitness business know you, but for anyone who is not in the fitness business or they haven't had the pleasure of making your acquaintance, can you talk a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I started as a classic, I hate to start that way, it's almost so boring. Well, I started as a kid. I was fascinated by the fitness process, and I was working in a gym when I was in grad school. And I realized nobody knew anything about the gym, and I was in management and trying to figure out, you know, what I wanted to do. And I loved the fitness business, had since I was a kid. I was in sports and all that. And I looked at this business and go, man, nobody knew anything about it. So as a business opportunity, I'm going, what a great chance to be that person. And some of the best advice I ever gotten as a kid was, I had a professor, and he was a funny little math guy. You know, he was the classic geek guy. He was probably, you know, he's a little bitty guy, wore these big oversized shirts. He always had the pocket protector. Yes, they really did make those. Yeah. He had the horn rim glasses. He was that guy. And he took me aside one day and he says, you know, I can give you some advice. He says, you try hard in here. I said, I want to help you. And I said, sure. And he goes, if you learn more about one thing than anybody in the world, he says, you'll never be out of work. And I was, you know, 17 at the time, and I go, yeah, sure, whatever. But when I was in graduate school, that popped into my head. I go, well, who knows anything about the gym business? And so I'm trained as a business consultant, and I just happened to specialize.
Is that what you studied in grad school, Tom?
Yeah, I was in the University of Arkansas. I was doing some I was fascinated at that time by higher education. So I thought I wanted to work in that field, but I got involved in management. And I just, that's what got me was how do things work? And I like the mechanics of it. I like the psychology of the business. I like the marketing. You know, it's just there's so many aspects. And being your consultant allows you to follow all those threads. So, you know, I kind of created my own path. And that turned out to be some of the best advice, if not the best advice I ever gotten was. And so I made a living somehow connected to the fitness industry this year. But I do a lot of other businesses. And as I got older and started to lose hair or get a little gray in that process, I started doing a lot of personal coaching, a lot of business coaching, just guys now. I think that's a lost art. I don't think a lot of people have someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. They used to go to your dad, but you know, how would you tell your dad, as crazy as you are with your career, how would you tell your dad, okay, I need some advice on my radio show, or I need some advice on, you know, I'm consulting now. And, so I have guys that, you know, they own businesses, but they're trying to put a life plan together, and they have no one. So I ended up on my average call now, I probably do 80-90% some kind of business coaching, personal coaching, and 20-30% on business these days. It's been an interesting path. It's kind of self-made, self-directed, but it's allowed me to follow the threads and kind of choose whatever path I wanted. It's been a very, very good run. I trained my first guy in 77, so I'm still hanging around out here doing the crazy stuff even now.
So you were never a personal trainer. You're always on the business side of things, helping people in fitness improve their business because everybody in fitness is lost.
Worked my way through graduate school and a gym. I was a trainer.
Oh, okay. All right.
Trainer and a martial arts guy, and that was a company called Leon Snearley's Power Company in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And he was a wild man, but he was a pretty good business guy back in the day, considering that nobody knew anything about him. So I was training clients on, you know, old, really strange crap equipment. There was no source of it. You know, you read early muscle and fiction books, you know, there was nothing out there. So you kind of went, you know, the old guy showed you how to, you know, do a curl or, and after that, except for a few months changing jobs since 77, that's all I've done. So I've always trained stuff. I kept my certifications up through the years and I still attend workshops and do that. But it's one of those things when you get connected to a field, you find a passion about something. I love writing. I love photography. I love coaching people. But, you know, it still comes down to it. I'm real happy in the gym most days.
Yeah. So cool, man. And I remember this is not the first time we've done an interview before. Matt and I interviewed you for a now defunct podcast because Matt's just taken off with his business, his new gym. But I want to go back to what you were saying about mentoring, coaching as a lost art, and what you said about me asking my dad for advice, because not only would he not be able to give it because it's just outside of the world's just changed so much, right? It's an online radio show that I'm doing. But also, he's not the guy. I feel like I give my dad more advice. And it just seems like there's a lack of mentors, role models, good parents out there. What's your perspective on that?
It's Anne Rice, the vampire books.
Okay.
She wrote
Interview with the Vampire.
Pretty funny that vampires only... They could live forever theoretically, but they died in 400 years because the world around them changed so much that they just couldn't keep up, and they would somehow self-destruct, you know, whatever the death by Anne Rice would be back in when those books were popular. But I think the world's like that now, that I think it's changing so rapidly that the rules from one generation seldom work for the next generation. So I'm almost an outlier in the fact that I'm coaching guys 25 years old and what to do with the rest of their life. And I just talked to a really cool guy yesterday, and he's late 20s. He was a professional trained in another field, and he's got a gym. And so we're putting a 10-year life plan together for this. We're putting together a financial plan for him. We're putting together, you know, how to expand the gym. But he's, you know, he's talking about, okay, investments, homes, exit strategies, and all these things. And is like, who would you talk to about that? Because all that stuff is, it's timely. We're talking about marketing. So I'm trying to educate the guy on social media marketing and that platform. And so to be a coach these days, you have to be such a freak of nature, meaning you're fascinated by the whole world, that you're willing to study, think, and learn everything, because you have to be able to help a guy everything from a lease negotiation in my world to, you know, how put money into index funds to, you know, what's the best long-term investment strategy and how do you negotiate a lease and raise partners. And by the way, do you have a partnership agreement? And by the way, your wife wants to retire in a few years. So what are we going to talk about there? And have you figured out this calculator, you know, and all this? And it's harder, and life is so complicated that I think people now, they get to a point where they're willing to ask for help. And it's, then where do you go if you say, okay, I want help? Mm-hmm. So who are you going to ask? There's a lot of guys that you travel around with, especially, and a lot of guys that do, that they're very, very good in very narrow dimensions. But right. To find somebody that you want a business coach that knows anything about this industry, that's tough. You find somebody that can fix other small businesses, that's tough. To find somebody that's willing to look at you as a speaker, that's tough. So I think it's going to get tougher. I think the eclectic Renaissance man type of consultant that can understand a lot of parts of your life, I don't think a lot of guys are willing to do the work to become that guy. But I think if you become that person, you're guaranteed work for life, because there's so many people that want help and need help and are willing to pay for help. And I think that's a big change, big issue.
Yeah, you're bringing up so many great points. And like you said, you are an outlier. You are this guy who a lot of the people your age are not with it at all. They're wondering what happened to the world they used to live in. And everybody's on all these kids are glued to their phones these days. And what I want to ask you, because I'm determined not to be that person. I'm determined to be a person who grows with this world. I don't want to be fighting against it, because I know I'll get squashed like a fly, metaphorically speaking, if not literally. So how do you stay open-minded, and how do you stay on top of the trends and adaptable as the world continues to change and technology explodes exponentially? How do you do that, Tom?
I get that. That's actually a common question, because of just the weirdness of the situation. This year, we've taught 4 social media schools, or in the last probably 7 months, there are social media boot camps. We've had people come through there. All 4 of those have been different in their progressions, because we've learned so much, our team, between each one, that we've actually had to modify most of the base structure to stay ahead of everybody else. and the rules are changed. So you have to have a fascination with what you want to be about. What do you want to coach? What do you want to help? And I don't, if I look back, the bigger picture is, I don't think there's a lot of people that know what they want to do, what they want to learn, what to invest their time in. That's another good advice I've gotten over the years is if you find something and you start to research it, you pull the thread out, meaning, okay, I'm in social media. Okay, so who knows anything about that? So I talk to those guys. So I read a couple of their books and I go online and do this. And then you get on Facebook and you sit there in the middle of the night and just pound the shit out of all the buttons to make sure what works, what doesn't work. And then you get a couple of clients and you say, look, try this. And then you go from that point. And it's, you have to be fascinated enough with the threads to pull the process out. And it's a lot of guys, I think, are too superficial. They're not willing to go deep enough to master something because it's just, they don't want to do the work. That's a tough advice. And as a side note on this, taking it a step further, I think the listeners, the best advice I could give them, and it's a choice that everybody will make at some point, is you, at some point you have to either teach somebody else's viewpoint, or at some point you have to create your own path. And the old saying is you can predict the future or you can create the future. And we talk a lot about the modern training gym. Well, that started in the late 90s with a couple of my clients. It was a couple of guys that we needed a solution, and the one-on-one training business wasn't working. The mainstream gyms were at a very flat period in that decade. And we had guys like Bill Parisi that were coming, Alan Cosgrove out of the martial arts, and guys that were athletes, but they weren't using those techniques to train adults. They were using them to train sports guys. So why won't these techniques work in our field? And these weren't the first guys to do, quote, functional training, which is a horrible name, but they were the first guys to ever make money out of this. So at that point, I needed a solution. We created something new. And instead of me teaching other people stuff or trying to reinvent the wheel, just create a path where you think it has to go. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of guys are willing to get that committed to stand behind something where you go, look, this is the future. This is the way it's going to go. I'm taking everybody with me, and I'm going to be strong enough to create that. And a lot of your listeners, I look at your base down there. You have so many interesting listeners from so many aspects of life that – but this would work for an attorney. This would work for a financial guy, a doctor – is you create your own path, you create your own journey, and then people can't copy you because they don't even know where you're going. And that's that gives you a way to create your own future, your own life, and to stay ahead of everybody because you create the future in your own vision. You don't get trapped by somebody else's madness.
Yeah, so well said. And you mentioned earlier, you feel like people just aren't willing to do the work, the deep work required to become that person. Can you give some specifics or a story about what you mean by that?
If we had on the social media, we had a woman that was 25 years old. She 26 years old. She had a master's degree in communications, and she set for the school in 3 days. And she goes, I've never learned any of this. And I'm going, well, why not? She goes, because in school they teach us the theory, but there's no practical application. You don't. So because in this thing, we're making a build ads that they had to launch in their business sites, and they had to write copy, and they had to post. They had to actually, here, not only do it, but let's put it up there and see what everybody thinks of this, Let's pay $10 and send it to the world. And that's the type of thing. If you really want to know that, you have to be the person that goes, look, I'm just going to be that person. I'm going to be this social media person. I'm going to learn more about it than anybody. I'm going to just study it. I'm going to talk to everybody, and I'm going to own this chunk of information and be that person. But to do the work to that, to do the interviews, to read the books, to make the mistakes, to get up in front of people and say, look, this is what I think. Let's try this. That's the hard part. A lot of people just aren't willing to. Sometimes it's not a willingness. Sometimes it's a fear thing. Sometimes it's a depth thing. Sometimes it's a skill set. But for whatever reason, there's not a lot of people that are willing to take ownership of something and make it theirs and do the work over the years to be the best there was at that. That's the thing I tell a lot of the guys, and they laugh at me, a lot of the younger guys. I say, look, you're sitting here. I got 1,200 people sitting in this room. How many of you feel you're the best coach ever? And 30 hands will go up. And I'm like, well, the rest of you, what the hell are you doing, And if you're not trying to be the best there ever was at something, then that means you're trying to be average. Mm-hmm. And average guys don't make a lot of money. Average guys don't live exciting lives. average guys don't create anything of value to pass on to people. Average guys usually, they might turn out a couple of good kids and they might have a nice marriage and a nice, you know, nice quiet life, but they don't usually change the world. And that's the type of person where if you get a financial guy that listens to you, a young financial guy, 35 years old, which might be one of your typical listeners, if that guy walks in tomorrow and he's not dedicated to be the best there ever was in that, I can't understand why he went to work.
Right.
You know, I don't even know why the guy's there, because it's just how boring is that existence if you're not trying to create something, you know, create madness out of your own energy. You've got to create that. You know, you've got a certain... Why not you? Why not that guy? And you might not be the best, but man, if you try to be the best guy every day, you're usually going to rise above everybody else that just doesn't give a damn. That's hard advice, but when I explain that to people, then everybody wants to be the best guy. But it's that striving, that ability. So when I say they won't do the work, I'm thinking they're not dedicated to mastering something where you're going to be the best consultant ever, the best speaker ever, the best financial guy ever, where you're going to actually change the world around you just because of the sheer force of your intensity, just by the sheer force of you, you know, the power of being you. And that's a pretty cool thing when it works.
Yeah, wow. That is so well said. And I don't know where you got the 35-year-old financial guy from, but there are guys who are in that position, because I've spoke to them on the phone. And you mentioned earlier about getting clarity. And a lot of people don't know what they want to do. And you have this great breakdown of what people should be doing in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, their 50s. Can you talk a little bit about that and perhaps give some advice and help set some people on the right path, depending on where they are age-wise?
When I get those calls sometimes with the guy, it may be a call like, can you fix my business? And then 15 minutes later, the rest of the call is, you know, and by the way, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And you can help people, but you can't help them if they don't know where they're going. And so the first step for a lot of people, and I think this is why a lot of consultants fail, is they assume they know where the client is heading. And if you don't slow the process down and figure out what the guy truly wants, not the superficial stuff, not the stuff that he tells his spouse or she tells her spouse, not the stuff that they say in a goal setting seminar, but the secret deep down really cool shit they think about 5 minutes before they go to bed. That's the stuff that if you can get that out of them and get that somewhere into the universe, then you can work with the person. So to get them to kind of like, what do you want? And I use something, people have written about this for years, and you've seen this probably maybe in some of the old motivational books, but my take on it is each decade there's got to be a milestone. And from talking to clients, I started actually consulting and helping people in 1980 was the first time I really started messing with people with goal setting and their lives and beyond their business too. A lot of martial art guys back in that day, but I kind of put together a way to think about this. It helps people kind of see where they should be and kind of gives them permission to be okay. And so, you know, short version of that is the 20s. I think people, they get too serious. They need to explore. They need to try a bunch of jobs on, try a bunch of different potential mates on, try to, you know, go live in France for a year, you know, go to Mexico for a month. Just do something in there to try to find out who they are. Guys that get right out of school and go to work, they fail. They fail in so many things because they never had a life. You know, so a lot of guys would benefit from taking a year off before school. A lot of guys should go to school for 2 years, take a year off, and then go finish school for 2 years. You know, when you graduate, why do you have to jump into career today? You know, why not just grab a paddleboard and just do the intercoastal? You know, there's got to be something in here that your life means something in your 20s. That should be the decade where you explore, you try things on, you have new adventures. Statistically, people that get married in their 20s, that doesn't work very well. Because you're now statistically, you're going to live till you're 90. To find a mate when you're 27 that's going to keep you entertained when you're 90, I mean, that's at least statistically, people are starting to put that off for a while, but that's a hard thing. So in your 20s, you explore. When you move into your 30s, you should find something that means something to you. But this is one of the biggest lines of bullshit I ever hear. I just don't know what I do. And you know what? Don't tell me what you're going to do. Tell me what you're going to do now. The next step. Don't worry about the last step. I don't care what you're going to retire at when you're 70 or 80, but tell me, what do you find, what do you want to spend the next 5 years of your life? when you give permission to people not to have to worry about the end or the last step and worry about now, what are you going to do? What are you passionate about now? What do you love now? What do you want to do now? And you give people permission to do that, then all of a sudden that gets a lot easier choice. So in your 30s, you need to commit to something. And it may be your life's work or it may be your life's work today. But you find something that is fascinating, something that you feel is powerful, something that gets you out of bed in the morning. And then you start to learn that. You commit. You start to learn your craft. In your 40s, that's where mastery usually comes from. So if you're a doctor, a financial guy, a coach of something, when you turn into your 40s, that's when you usually get mastery. To be a professional, you know, coach like Matt, you know, if you met Matt when he was 22, I'm sure that Matt would tell you at that point he knew everything in the world about training.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Now that Matt's not 22 and you ask him now, he finally probably admits that, oh, I don't even know what I'm doing today sometimes, because he's finally a master coach. He's finally a guy that's, he's got, you know, 1,000 sessions. He's got a lot of certifications. He's got a lot of patience. He's had success and failure with clients. He's a guy now that you really want to be your coach, because he's finally to the point that he admits he doesn't know everything. So you work on mastery in your 40s. You master your craft, master your passion. Your late 40s going into now, that's extended. They used to talk about that decade of your 50s, but it starts a lot earlier now. So your mid to late 40s to your 60 is when you create wealth in your life. And that's usually when you're going to create the most money. That's when you're probably going to, if you don't get it done by the time you're like 55, 57, 58 at that point, you're probably not going to be that guy. And that's the hardest call I have, by the way, is guys that when they move into their 50s, that they, you know, the guy's got $2,000 in the bank and he's a personal trainer somewhere, or he owns a little gym that's just making enough for a living. And I have to tell the guy, look, dude, you're going to be working until you die, because you can't, there's no time left for you to make enough money to retire. You're going to work until you die. And that's the hardest call that I ever have, because you tell people, and we all have relatives like that. We have them that jump careers 4 or 5 times. And so if you haven't arrived by the time you're in your mid 50s, that you haven't got a plan and good financial plan, you can put some money away and you're probably in a job that maybe you can. But I know a doctor that makes 6 figures a year, probably makes $600,000 a year. And the guy is in his probably pushing 52, 54. Guy's got $100,000 in the bank. He's made great money for a long time, but he doesn't have enough money for his lifestyle to support him over 90 days. So This guy, you know, you get after it, or you realize your lifestyle is going to consume you and you work until you drop. So in your 50s, you have to create wealth, but it has to be part of a long-term sequence. And late 50s and 60s, that's when you traditionally give back. That's when you become the mentor, you become the guy that helps others and gives a lot of people a hand up, and you do something good with your money. You know, that's when you volunteer at Habitats for Humanity. That's when you become a fan of a food bank and support them. That's when you find something to do with your wealth besides just, you know, buy another Ferrari and another house in Miami, you know, that's on the water. You got to do something. That money's got to make a difference or mean something to most people. In late 60s and 70s, I do the Perform Better Summits every year. I'm doing the keynote there, all 4 of them this year. For your listeners that don't know that, that's the 35 of the 40 of the brightest minds in fitness. Everybody from Mike Boyle, Alan Cosgrove, Verstegen, all these legends, all teaching here for 4 days. And last year I did a workshop there and I had about 250 in the room, and there were 17% of the people in there that were over 55. And these were guys coming back out of other careers that want to be a coach for their next career. So when you're late 60s and 70s, nobody really dies anymore. You just kind of change careers and now you do what you always dreamed of doing. So when I talk to people, I try to find out where they are on that continuum, you know, where do you fit? And if you haven't found your way on that continuum, we almost need to get you retrofitted into a slot somewhere to find out, okay, then maybe we need to work on this part of your life or this part of your life, because we got to get you set again to go forward. And using that, it gets you as a consultant in some brilliant conversations, meaning fun, because it has so much fun trying to find out what the guy thinks, where he feels he fits, you know, why he doesn't fit, why he's ahead of the game, behind the game, and then allows you to get him on track, because now we got at least an idea of what we're trying to accomplish with the guy.
Yeah, wow. I've heard you say this before, but every time you say it, it just it's so powerful because first, like you said, it gives people permission. If you're in your 20s, you don't know what the hell is going on, it's probably a good thing. Go and try even more things. And in your 30s, like you said, you start to pick something and really focus on it. In your 40s, you start to develop mastery. In your 50s, you really have to be set because, like you said, Tom, if you're not developing that financial future, that retirement fund or whatever, you're going to be behind the eight ball to make it happen. In your 60s, you give back. And it's so powerful. I'm so happy to have you on this show to be sharing this because this is exactly what is missing. Like you said earlier, it's just missing. They're not people saying this stuff and at least providing a template for people to follow. And that's why, and you just gave that. It does bring up, I see you working like crazy still. I mean, do you want to retire? I know you're not hurting for money. You're very successful. I don't know if I want to retire as a speaker. Zig Ziglar spoke for a long time and, you know, Jim Rohn, are you going to retire or what's that going to unfold like for you?
A lot of people ask me that almost every day.
Okay.
It's like, when are you going to stop flying? I'm still flying probably 35, 40 weeks a year. I'm still on planes somewhere. I think there's a point in life for a lot of people where you get up in the morning and you don't have to go to work. You just want to go to work. And that I'm doing the keynote at the Perform Betters this year. And the talk is on money, why you don't have it and how to get it. And I have a couple of very, very good friends that are very, very advanced financial planners, have been doing it for a while. The person that handles my stuff over the years and an old friend that's known for 30 years is this. And we've been talking a lot about money and retirement and all that. And the best thing that I can teach anybody that's sitting in front of me is money is not cars. It's not homes. It's not, you know, every young guy when he's 30 has a picture of him leaning on a Ferrari. You know, that's, everybody runs that on Facebook. Every guy's got to do that. It's like a rite of passage into stupidity. You know, that's, but money, the best thing I can tell people is it exists for one reason only. It's freedom. It gives you the ability to live life on your own terms. It's not about the cars and the houses. It's about the ability to take care of your family, to live in a neighborhood where your kids are safe, to, if you lost your job, you're not panicked because you have reserve. At some point when you get older, your house is paid off. You're not living off Social Security. You have other means to take care of yourself. Money is freedom, and money is the ability to do that. So I've been very blessed in my life that I'm at the point where, you know, you get up in the morning and you want to go to work. And there'll be an end to it soon because I want to leave the dance before I'm too old to dance. And we're probably not too far away from that. But what I'm really working on now is trying to figure out the next career. As you know, I love to write and I love to do the books. And so I'm looking and out, exploring blog sites for money and trying to turn. I've got a very gracious following on Facebook. And so I want to figure out a way to keep going, maybe speak four or five times a year for a while and do some fun things. But at some point, the getting on the plane is just not going to be as much fun as it used to. Plus, I've had my run. I've had a very good run. At some point, I think one of the signs of maturity is when you know you've driven the bus far enough and you got to get up and just hand it to somebody else like you or somebody that's going to come behind me. And you're like, dude, here's the keys. You know, I'm going to go sit in the back of the bus and drink some beer now and hang out and, you know, spit out the window and be an ass and just be that guy. You know, I'll ride on your bus, but I don't want to drive it anymore. And everybody gets to that point. But I'm not quite there yet, but I see horizon there and it's not that far out. So. But as of today, it's a beautiful thing, man. I've just come off some really nice trips. I just came back from London, and that was a wonderful thing. That they're about 5, maybe 10 years behind us in the market over there.
Right.
So we're working with young trainers that are just insane, and they're just desperate for leadership, and they're just – it's so – stuff like that, that's still so – I mean, I'm standing in London. It's one of the most beautiful days in 10 years, according to the weather. I'm standing outside a pub with 12 guys drinking – the best beer in the world, watching, you know, London go by on the main street, right downtown London. I'm going, I'm getting paid for this, man. So it's just like, I don't know if I really want to give this up today. You know? It's just like, this is so cool. You know, it's just like I'm standing out there and these guys are all just like, you know, like I used to be and all my, you know, guys used to be years ago. They're like, well, we're going to build this and we're going to do this and we're going to change the world. And how do we do this? And it's like, buy me another pint, dude, and let's talk, you know. It just, days like that, you kind of go, I just hope it never ends. And it's just, it's such a beautiful thing. But at some point, you just get too old to be real in this business. At some point, if I was in a different industry, I could probably go a lot longer. In the fitness industry, you get in your mid-60s, and I think sometimes the credibility issue is there. So at some point, my horizon's coming up soon here.
Well, it's good to hear that, because I think a lot of people who don't have your perspective or my perspective, because I work with clients who have hundreds of millions of dollars. Their net worth is in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And for them to retire, that would be like suicide for them. And it's not about the money. It's about having something to do. And I think a lot of them are perhaps a bit misguided about where they're putting their energy and time. But the fact is that most people would get super bored, super depressed if they were to win the lottery today and go move to Mexico and drink little drinks with umbrellas out of them on the beach for 3 to 6 months. And what you're saying is, I'm so passionate. I love what I'm doing. And that story you just shared about the connection and camaraderie you had with the people, the guys in outside the pub, and showing them the light and showing them the way and helping them and making a difference. I mean, that's just so, I heard it in your voice. It was so powerful. And I've had that experience too, not in the same way, but from speaking. And you kind of showed me the way, the power of speaking when I attended your course. So it's really, really powerful and important to hear that. One thing I want to ask you now is,
let me one point
please,
on that.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, what you said, that those guys that make the money, the guys that are the money guys, there's a theory that all the guys, Jobs and Gates and everything, they're almost so narrowly focused that they're almost in on an autistic scale. They might even make that scale because they have the ability to focus on one thing more than other people do. Mm-hmm. So when you get a guy that's in his 60s, that's got 100 million, and I've got a bunch of clients like that over the years and more, and I think at some point they don't know how to be relevant in any other way. So it's not that they, to me, which is interesting for a lot of your younger guys in here, is if you don't develop other ways to live your life, that you get to a certain point that you have no other way to live your life. So when all you've done has been the guy that ran that company that created that concept, and you've got hundreds of people following you for years, and then all of a sudden, how do you get out of that? Because you get up tomorrow, you're not that guy, but they've never cultivated any other way to live. So I think they say, yeah, you know, I quit. If I, you know, I die, I'd be so bored. But it's if you talk to them deeply, you put a couple of martinis in these guys and you sit up till 2, where I do most of my best research, and you're sitting there with these guys and you really talk to them, you find out that it's not so much that. It's like, you know, they screwed up. They don't have a strong enough interest base to do that. I can give you an example of a guy that did. I worked with a guy that one time owned allegedly 3/4 of all the ambulances in the U.S. That's the story I heard about him. I never verified that with him, but he just bought and sold and bought these and became amazingly successful. I mean, to just beyond concept. But he quit when he was fairly young and sold out because he wanted to have a ranch and he had kids, and he would take the kids to China for 2 months at a time, and the kids were older and he'd take their whole families, and he had these giant motor homes. And I admired this guy so much because he had like 5 different homes. He'd show up somewhere and spend 3 weeks on this PGA golf course and then go on to the next home. And he was just, his life was so full that I don't know how the guy ever worked. You know, I don't know how he could work. He had so much going on in his life. He was one of the most well-rounded people that I've ever met. He had a huge friend base outside of the business. He had depth, he had interest. And he's a rare person in the fact that he developed those through the years, because when he knew that when he sold his business, he didn't want to be that guy. So I think for a lot of your listeners, it's, you know, you have to develop a depth of your life based on not assets, but experiences on, you know, someday I want to climb 15 of the, you know, I want to climb all the 14,000 foot peaks in Colorado, or I want to, you know, I want to surf the big waves in Hawaii, or I got to have a reason not to be the guy anymore. I think that's the big mistake that a lot of those guys make. When I talk to them deep late at night and we get deep talks, is they don't know how to get out because they have nothing else to do in their life. If they get up tomorrow, they don't want to play golf that much. Mm-hmm. They don't have a lot of friends. They're not in the business. They don't have anywhere to go. They're tired of working out in a little gym every day. They do that. They're bored. And these guys actually have created immense wealth, but absolutely no life whatsoever.
I'm so glad you said that, because people don't get that. They don't have the experience, and they think that people like that have had it made. And man, it's just, it's nothing could be further from the truth sometimes. You know, one of my clients who's very successful, his wealth is like generations, and I'm worth a couple hundred mil. I don't ask him, but I know based on what he's done, it's got to be up there. But then he'll say something like, oh, well, he'll talk about one of his friends who's more successful. He's like, oh, well, that guy is really successful. So even he's even insecure and doesn't feel confident about what he's accomplished. And it's so sad. And does it, because you have these more in-depth conversations than I do, like you said, at the bar, 2 a.m. with the barriers down, with a few drinks in them, because I usually try to avoid that, Tom, with these guys. I don't think I'm the guy to help them with that. But can you talk a little bit about that idea? And I mean, I guess you just kind of did. You need to have a life outside of that. But also about developing the confidence in yourself and not being the guy who has the most money. Where does that line exist? How do you become really confident? Because you can't be the guy with the most money in the world, right? Even though you said you should try to be number one. Can you explain that idea a little bit further?
Yeah, well, number one doesn't necessarily mean financially. I used to take the winters off, and I ski for like 2 months, and so I'd work the rest of the year, and then I'd ski for 2 or 3 months and try to get my, you know, 150 days in that year. And so I'd go out and consult for a day and then come back and ski for, you know, a month. And so it was a cool thing, but I tried to take a little of my retirement early. But I had a couple of friends there. One guy, his name was Stan, and he was he was probably 5 years, 8 years older than I was. And he lived in a little house. By most people's standards, he was poor, but you walk out the back of his house and you're overlooking 2 14,000-foot peaks in the highest city in America. So he's got this little, you know, two-bedroom, little tiny house, little, you know, little shamble garage, skied all winter, and then in the summer he just painted for the mountain, meaning he painted all their condos and stuff. So, and he probably, you know, by most standards, didn't have a lot of money in the bank. I'd put him happiness up against anybody I've ever met. Because if you talk about a lot of guys, you know, I make $100 million, so I can go ski, you know. So Stan lives in the ski mountains. He lives there, you know. They make all this money so they can windsurf 2 weeks a year. Well, that Stan was one of the best windsurfers. He'd windsurf on these high alpine lakes with just this wicked wind and ice cold water, and he'd do that all summer. I mean, he was a guy that everybody else makes a lot of money so they can do what this guy does year round for nothing. And right. So the money thing is, it gets bizarre. The Titleist, I do a lot of work at the Titleist Performance Institute, one of the probably most amazingly best run certification things in the world, and the number one in the world for golf education, golf certification, golf fitness. And they had a fantasy cap. They used to have these at their headquarters in Carlsbad. And they'd have all these wealthy guys that would come in for 4 or 5 days. And then they'd pay, you know, big money, 10, 12, 15 grand to get fitted for clubs. And they'd get a whole personalized fitness program. And they'd go play 4 or 5 of the best courses and get instruction and all this. And these guys were driving back. Two of these guys were billionaires. And one guy was worth about $500,000. And they were drinking a little. So they stopped and pulled over the limo and threw this guy out, the half billionaire, because he didn't have enough money to ride with the billionaires. So we're in the car behind and we see him pull over. And the guy gets kind of – he's laughing. But they kind of get pushed out of the car. And he goes, can I ride with you guys? And And he said, I don't have enough money to ride with them. So we were kidding. Well, we don't have enough money to ride with you. So you got to walk. So we pulled up about 30 yards and we're laughing at the guy, but here's a guy that's, he is crazy successful, but there's a pecking order with that. And that's his sanity. I think there's always truth to the old adages is one is you sell them. When you find a guy that creates that immense wealth is they usually create wealth for the next generation and they never have any kind of life on their own. You see a guy like Gates that changes, he gives more money away some morning than the whole universe combined. He is one of the most, he's a guy that just gets it. He's a guy that's just, he's using his wealth in so many good ways, but not a lot of guys like that. So the guys that create wealth, you create wealth for the next generation of your family, but you've lost your whole life doing it. So there's a point of no return with money where if you don't, and I think it's obsessive, and I'm not a half billionaire or anything like that by any means, but the guys that I know that I work with that, they get to a point where they often lose their perspective because the chase becomes more important than the reality. And they're willing to sacrifice their families and everything to have a future that they're never going to live to see. I had a guy that commuted back and forth. He was an investor in a company in New Jersey, and he was on the board of that company, and it was a big sports performance group. And he got up at 5 in the morning, was on the 5:45 train, rode into Manhattan, came home on the 8 o'clock train, and he did this for, I think, almost 20 years. And he'd go in on Saturdays a lot of times. So here's a guy that was, he'd come in and see his kids 10 minutes before they go to bed, hang out with his son on Saturday afternoon. That's how he got involved in sports performance. But here's a guy that worked for 20 years to build wealth. And then he got to the point where now the kid's grown. The dad is, he's got all this money in the bank and he's never had a life. So he sacrificed 20 years of living in the hopes that I'm going to have money to be able to live at that point. And just much bigger does the house have to get? How many more Ferraris do you need? How many more, having a nice car is cool, but that should be something way beyond creating wealth as a freedom tool. So I see these guys and it's just the perspective of having a life and using the money to create experience and not assets and not stuff and not junk and not toys where you use the money to see the world or change the world or experience the world. That's a maturity. So summarizing all that, I'm sorry for the long ramble, but summarizing all that, there's a certain person that becomes comfortable living in their own skin and being them. They become that person that they're not, if the guy's got $50 in the bank and he's cool like my friend Stan, that he's at peace being himself. He's comfortable. He knows who he is. He knows what he wants from life. He's not, doesn't feel peer pressure from somebody that's got more money. He's created a life on his own terms and he's comfortable in his own skin. And it's weird to say, but I see guys, especially in the guys 30, 40s, that they're so driven because their friends are driven. But if I take this guy and put him in an Outward Bound school or put him in a ski resort and let him make $10 an hour as a bartender, the guy would probably be 10 times happier. They're driven by other people's standards, not your own. So the lesson in that is, what do you believe? What are your standards? What drives you internally? Are you comfortable being in your own skin? And then are you making decisions that are living up to your own personal standards of who you are? Or do you base every decision trying to keep up with somebody else's standards? And that's a tough lesson to learn. And sadly, a lot of people never learn that lesson. They just get trapped and then you become that 100 million guy that's 65 years old that's afraid to quit work because he has no life. And he's got every car, every house, every vacation home. His wife's got every bauble. He throws every good party. But the guy sitting in a bar with five friends, throwing darts in London, the guy's got no fucking clue at all. He just couldn't do it to save his life. He could never be that guy because he couldn't ever not be the guy. It's more important to be the guy than be a guy in that sense. That's a long story, but it's still a perspective of being comfortable in your own skin. And that's, you gotta know who you are, what you believe, what's your standards, what's your morals, what's your ethics, what do you believe money is? How do you use money? And it doesn't you can't give a damn about what anybody else thinks about it. It's what you believe. And people don't ask themselves the questions often enough, and therefore they get caught up in other people's standards.
Yeah. And Tom, I got to say, I love your long answers.
Sorry.
I interview people all the time, really interesting, cool people all the time. But I'll tell you, I could sit here for hours and just listen to you talk and have listened to you talk for hours and had drinks with you. Although I think I wimped out and did not stay up until 2. But yeah.
Matt was there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's for another story. I was going through a tough time at that moment, but so important. I feel like I've lived to my own standards. I always have, but I've always been a rebel. And people tried to tell me no. And then I was like, thanks. Now I have even more ambition, even more energy to go and do it. But so many people do get sucked up into that game of living up to other people's expectations, standards, values, instead of defining their own.
The no thing is very important, because a lot of your listeners are of a certain age where when they start to show success, they get promoted or create their own company or want to open their own company, they'll find a lot of their friends will say no, try to talk them out of it, because that literally puts the pressure on me as your friend. Now I've got to do something. And a lot of times your family, thinking they're protecting you, will say, don't take that risk, or, you know, you shouldn't do that, because they've never risked. They've never done anything. They could be good people. Your parents could be great people and they supported you your whole life and you love them to death. But, you know, if your dad's an hourly wage guy for your whole life and you're trying to start a company, he will never understand that risk. You know, your mother's going to tell you no. She's going to say, no, you know, I was a school teacher for 30 years. You know, why don't you just get a pension and get a nice job and, you know, get married or whatever they're going to tell you. But you're so far out of their understanding. So at some point, you just got to pull the trigger and be you. You just got to do it on your own. You just got to make that decision. I'm that guy, you know, and I'm going to do this, because your friends, as you get more successful, they tend to pull you down. A lot of times as you get better, you got to let go of your old friends, because some of them will actually sabotage your success, some consciously, some not consciously, but they'll do everything they can to make sure that their world doesn't change because you're changing. And so it's surprising how many people, when I talk to them about their support group, when they get better, they get a lot of people pissed off at them and they don't understand the anger. And it's like, you're breaking the rule of the tribe. You're changing. And you guys agreed as drunken friends years ago, you're not going to change, but you are. And you're living up to your own talent, which is a heavy burden. And you become that guy and you're going to hear no a lot. And so you really have to not listen to those. You have to have enough understanding to go, okay, they give me a no, but that's out of their perspective. And their perspective is, I've never taken any risks. So they're always going to say no. You know, they don't want you to change. So they're going to say no. I've got it good. No, you know, do it my way or I don't love you anymore. That's all somebody else's nonsense. And you got to avoid all that. That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. Eloquently stated, that's the dark side of going after what you want and doing what it takes to become who you need to be to achieve what you want. And yeah. Tom, do we have a few more minutes?
Oh, certainly. Sure.
Okay. I'd love to talk a bit about what people can do. I think you've explained so many important concepts about how to find your values, how not to be led in the wrong direction or in someone else's direction, not to get sucked into trying to make a lot of money so you can go do something else. Just go do that something that you really want to do. And you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that you said something to the effect like, it's really hard right now to be successful because of how fast the world is changing. But at the same time, there's more opportunities than ever. Like, I'm talking to you and all the other great guests that I've had on the show. What advice can you share about becoming successful in this modern era that we live in, that is so inundated with information and choices and more competition in some ways? What do we need to do? And very general, of course, because there's all types of people listening, and I know that's a tall order, but I know you're up to it. What do we need to know? What do we need to do to be successful in this modern world that we're living in?
I don't think it's harder to be more successful. I think it's harder to find people that you can talk to about who you are and the success you want to experience.
Ah.
So the basis of that is, yeah, it's when you go, okay, I want to do this, so I want to open a new brewery or I want to open a bike shop or whatever I'm doing, when you talk to somebody like that, you go, okay, there's not a whole lot of guys to talk about when that life, because you're so out of most your normal support groups element. But the fact that the world is changing quickly, anytime there's chaos, there's always opportunity. There's always that ability for people to find a hole in the niche, and things are changing so quickly now. In the fitness world, the mainstream gyms, those big box gyms, they're death. The consumer has passed them. They're too expensive to build anymore. Most of the guys that work out in our, between your generation and mine, the guys now that really work out, you work out in training gyms because you find guys like Matt Pack and you say, look, I want a professional master coach and I'll pay you $300 or $400 or $1,000 a month to work out here. And the guys buy results and they go forward. There's a $10 gyms, there's guys like that, but there's always that guy that wants more. There's only two ways to really build a business. You do something cheaper than somebody else, or you do something better than somebody else. So if I'm going to find a hole in a market, if I'm going to open a restaurant, I either go cheaper or I build a top-end restaurant that's been that hole. So I build a buffet or I build that. If I'm building a gym, I either build a $9 gym or I open a $1,000 a month training gym in Boca. There's always, when you're looking at the business, almost every business plan has to fit into one of those two models. So the opportunity comes from exploiting a niche and figuring out what that niche is. But if you're not, and every consultant, every speaker says this, and it's the most bullshit thing I can possibly tell anybody, but if you are not invested passionately about business, you're probably going to suck at it. You're not going to be any good at it. I could figure out mechanics of opening some businesses. I've seen businesses that are horrible. But for me to open a pool business if I'm not passionate about, pool service and getting a bunch of guys together and doing it better and more cost effective than the local one-off guys doing it, that'd be a great business in Florida if you could run a good one. But I have no interest in that, no passion in it. I could figure it out mechanically. I could figure it out financially. But I wouldn't be excited about it. Therefore, I'm probably over time not going to be good at it. It's got to be based on how you want to live your life. It's got to be something that means something to you. And you're probably going to be a lot better at it than most people. And basically, it comes down to your training, your hour for time. Your hourly workers, there's a place. There's people that love to work for other people. There's people that want to be part of a huge team. But if you're a basic hourly worker, you're probably never going to create a lot of wealth in your life. You move up to management where you become a salaried person and take leadership role, then you might have a chance to make money. Or at some point you have to own something if you want to create wealth in your life. But there's things that as you explore what you want to become, what you love, some of the best stuff I've ever gone through was stuff. People ask me some stupid questions when I was young. I was like, okay, I'll write the answers out to these. And they've stuck me with years. One, like, who am I? It's like, well, what the hell question does that mean? Well, what do you believe? How do you feel people should be treated? I just wrote this on Facebook and it did really well. A lot of people were very excited about this stuff, but how should you treat people? How do you feel about money? How do you feel what you do with your money? How do you want to live your life? And I'm like, well, I never wrote all this out. So I started there. And then, what kind of business would you like to own? What, you want to change lives. You want to create a new service. And like, I like the life business. So I like gyms because they change lives. They do the right thing. It's a good business because we do the right thing in the fitness business. I help architectural firms. I help financial service firms and accounting firms. I do a lot of work in those fields too and helping people. But basically it comes down to, I love the fitness business and I spend probably 90% of my time there these days because it's the right business for me. I'm passionate about it. Therefore, I want to change the world through the seminars and workshops and books. You have to find something in there that just drives you insane, that you just know you can do it better. I can do it better, or I can find an angle to do it cheaper and help more people. But somewhere in there, if it's not better, a better quality, better service, top end than that, or it's not cheaper and I can build more of them and make your life easier, you're probably not going to be successful in business.
Great advice. You have to either do something cheaper and be like the Walmart or the Costco, or you've got to be the Ruth's Chris Steakhouse or whatever steakhouse is popular in your area, that where you go down and throw $80 down for your steak because nobody else cooks a steak like you in town.
Yeah, those are good analogies too, because you can eat, I could go to a buffet. I could go to some, you know, Chipotle, someplace like that. They figured out how to get decent food out, but they're cheap. And they've got a unique brand, unique food, but it's cheap. It's, you know, cheap food. And these guys all fight it. But look at the struggles at all these low-end providers. And now they're figuring out that cheap doesn't always work. So cheap has to actually solve a problem for somebody. On the upper end, there's almost no limits. And there's a very interesting book, if anybody's thinking of getting in their own business. It's called 113 Million Markets of One. A weird name, 113 million markets of one, but it's one of the better business books I've read in 10 years. And it talks about the difference between the consumers that we have in this country. And there's about 100 million people that are, you know, they're driven by media. They're people that will pay for results versus they're not in so much of the price. They're early adapters. They live in metro areas. Yeah, the guy had a lot of great definers. It's a wonderful book, but it's, you know, if you're going to build businesses, building a business for that segment is usually a pretty good bet, because they're the people that want better. They want quality. They want different at that stage. And cheaper is irrelevant to most of those people. Cheaper is a good business plan. And Planet Fitness, for example, that $10 gym when it came out, you know, 2 decades ago was a good plan. But it's just, I wouldn't be passionate about that business. I'd probably be terrible at it. But a training gym in Miami where I got 300 clients and every one of them's there because I can rock their world as a coach, that's what I want to do. You know, that's the type of stuff. And it ain't cheap, you know, $250 an hour or something like that, because people will pay for the best. And if you're the best coach, then you get the $250 or $1,000 in New York or whatever we get per hour in some of these markets. So being the best and chasing the quality and chasing that type of clientele, that it's not about the money, it's about the quality of the product. That's a pretty good business plan in itself for a lot of people.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because sometimes, like you mentioned, the cheap, going cheap can be a race to the bottom. If yeah. you don't have, like you mentioned, Chipotle, good, healthy food. I know that's arguable with all the debates yeah. and fights in nutrition, but absolutely better than, you know, McDonald's or whatever. But you're right, that's great that you mentioned that. I feel like we could talk business for hours. I want to change directions a little bit and sure. ask a bit about, do you have any success habits or morning rituals? I know you still work out, you look amazing, you know, you spend the time and you still have time to have drinks at 2 a.m. in the morning and, you know, you have this great life. What can you share about what you do to stay on top of your game?
That's an interesting thing. That's in a transition too. Oh, during the last number of years, I've kind of gotten out of the habits that I want to have, because I've taken on more work than I normally do, more travel, more outside speaking. And those things take up immense amount of time because, for example, for me to do an 8-hour workshop in Sydney, Australia, it takes me almost 5 days of sitting in front of my computer to build the slides for that. So if I take a bunch of those a year, or I go there and do 5 different workshops, I could spend almost 2 weeks or longer to build that. So that's when I've committed those things, it disrupted my schedule. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to, when I'm on my game, on fire, doing what I want to do, I'd like to write first thing in the morning. I'd like just to sit and crank, turn off the electronics and create something. I haven't done a new book in a while. The last one I did was the 5 Minutes of Sunshine, the book mm-hmm. on the parenting book. That was the last one, but I haven't done anything recently. I put a lot of time in Facebook and some of my other stuff. So for me to write 2 or 3 hours in the morning, that's got to happen. If I don't do it early, I won't do it. And I'm clear of mind and life is good in the morning. So the best stuff usually comes out. The old guys like Jack LaLanne were right. He booked out 1.5 hours every single day at the exact same time. And he would do that 6 days a week. And that was his workout time. And that was the single most important thing in his day. And he did that until he died. He was 96, I think, when he died. But his entire life, his workout was his biggest time. So he would block that out. So I'm that guy. I have to have 6 hours a week that I at least I have time booked where I'm moving. that falls apart sometime in the road. That's why I think there's got to be a horizon on that travel at some point. But you have to build around the things that are going to move your life ahead. So the rituals, I like, you know, I like the time dedicated for my craft. I like time dedicated at this stage of my life because fitness is getting harder as you get older. So I've got to have that time dedicated. I've got to have family time because that's important to me at this stage, to be there, to be around, to be that person. So you've got to, so when you get your priorities straight, your schedule becomes there. One thing I've done, and I think you've heard me talk about this before, is the Starbucks moment. Going about 30 years now, I go to Starbucks every 3 months. I get my old notebooks out. I'm a very tech guy, but I don't use them for this. I go and handwrite. Eventually, I drop it all in Evernote, but I go in and I'll sit for 2 to 3 hours in Starbucks with my headphones on, and I just write, you know, what do I want for my life? Where do I see myself 12 months from now? What do I don't like that I'm doing now? What do I like about what I'm doing now? How am I going to grow my life? You know, when do I want to quit? What financial goals do I still have to hit in my life? What education goals I still have to hit? What, you know, what do I want to give away this year? You know, all this, I sit down and I write. I usually have 10 to 20 questions that trigger it, but a lot of times I'm so amped to get there to do this anyway that I spend that time. And that's probably the most consistent ritual I've had over the years is every 3 months I want to project my life ahead 1 year, 3 years, 6 years, or 5 years, 10 years. Because I want to have a, I want to see myself in the future. And when you force yourself to do that, that's why, just as an interesting side note, that's why a lot of guys, when they're 30, have such a hard time saving money, is they never can see themselves. They're in their peak physically. They're rocks. They're, you know, the guys are going to win the, you know, CrossFit games. They're just absolute animals. To tell the guy that someday you're going to be me, and they look at you and go like, dude, you're old. And I'm like, yeah, and so you're going to be. They just can't see themselves there. So saving money and putting stuff away for a time that you can't even imagine in your own head that you're going to be that guy, because you're never not going to be you. You never can imagine not being how you are today. And then you get in your 40s and get a bunch of kids, and you know that crap changes real quickly, because the reality of that nonsense is going to change you. So for me, that forcing myself to always project myself ahead, So, and I write the age. So where am I going to be in 10 years? I'm like this, go, man, I'm going to be 73 years old. You know, that's, is it that old or is it young? And how do I want to live and what kind of shape I want to be in? Because I don't want to be like some of my acquaintances and golf guys I know that are that age that are all hobbled up. You know, I want to live a quality life. So that makes the 6 hours a week on the least going to the gym and moving around a little more important. So you when you project yourself ahead and you backtrack from that, it solves a lot of the problems on how you're going to eat, how you're going to live, what you're going to produce, what kind of money you want to make. Because if you always see yourself out there, you know what you're trying to accomplish to get to there. I just keep the target moving every 90 days because sometimes I'm just like, well, that was bullshit last time I wrote all this. I don't like any of this. You know, I want to. This is where I really want to go, and so this has changed. And so that, if I could give anybody advice, is, you know, don't, some of the rituals will fit you, they'll fit your job, and you might be an early workout guy. You might be a guy that likes to read at 5 a.m, and I have a lot of friends that do that, and I think that's very cool. You'll find the rituals for you, but if there's one ritual I could teach anybody, it's force yourself to project yourself ahead. Write the ages. So where am I going to be, you know, 1 year from now? Okay, I'm only going to be 64 in my case. So if you're 35, I'm going to be 36. If you're 35, I'm going to be 45. Well, geez, 45. I hadn't thought about that. What am I going to do there? You know, what am I going to look like? What am I going to feel like? Where am I going to live? You know, what kind of money do I want? What are my kids going to be doing 10 years from now? What do I need to support them? And you just write all this shit out as fast as you can. And the mere act of doing that just helps you just to stay focused and on track in what you're trying to do with your life. So that's the ritual I think everybody could benefit from.
Yeah. Wow. That is powerful. Projecting yourself into the future and making sure to keep yourself focused and making sure that what you're doing day to day is bringing you towards that life. So powerful, Tom. And man, you are so wise and so great at helping people understand and get clarity about their life. This has been such a powerful interview for me personally. And I'm the one, I've spent time with you, and just every time it's the same. And I would love to have you back, but I want to be respectful of your time. Also, I think you gave so much information for people listening right now that they're going to have to sit back and think about some things and implement some of what you said. But for people who want to learn more about you, what you do, or perhaps contact you for consulting, where would you like them to go?
If you're in the fitness industry, that's easy. They can find me at the National Fitness Business Alliance, or they can find me on Facebook on my public figure page. That's usually a good place to start. I don't do a lot of the life talks or things anymore. The books, if you're a parent, The 5 Minutes of Sunshine, you can get that off Amazon. That was a labor of love. I wrote letters to my granddaughter when she was 6. I've a lot of time spent on planes. So I thought, again, projecting myself ahead, I did one of my Starbucks moments is, you know, she's going to be 21 and I might not be here. And I've had the blessing of working with, you know, thousands and thousands of guys like you on their way up to establish their career. I've had so many thousands of great, interesting, fascinating conversations that I really wanted my granddaughter. I was like, well, there's things I would like to teach her. There's things I would like to leave her from these lessons. So I wrote letters to her on everything from reading to friendship to money to search for something, you know, a higher power in your life. And I wrote all these letters to her because I wanted her to think in terms of, you know, so you're 21 now and I might be there, I might not, but this is what I learned. These are how I thought about things. These are things I think every parent should do that. Every parent should, you know, your kids don't know who you are now. They're, you know, the kids, they forget that you were young, you were vital, that you danced
so
in
true.
A bar. Yeah, that you were in shape. And then all of a sudden your kids are, you know, 30 years old. And they look at you like they have no concept of that you used to be somebody, you know, they don't get it. So I think the best thing you can give kids is heritage. You have to let them know that, you know, it's a shame. I have some people, they don't even know their grandparents, their great grandparents. They've never met them. They don't know their heritage. They don't know their names. A lot of them don't know the full names of even the grandparents. You know, they're so disconnected from that world. But if you look back, like the World War II guys, you look at, you know, those guys at 18 were serving, you know, they were 18. I've just read a book again on World War II on D-Day. So you got guys 18 years old storming this beach in Europe and dying. And the average age there, I think, was 17 and a half or 18 for these soldiers. And now we got 18-year-old guys in college that are bitching and suing the college because there are certain words in class that make them uncomfortable. And it's, you know, I look at this going, you know, this is kind of weird. So, but this kid needs a letter from his granddad, you know. He needs that was the latest book. And if you're a parent, it might be a good book. And it might force you to actually write letters and put them in a safe deposit box and actually take pictures, not on a camera, but actually you print some pictures out, picture books, and, you know, create a life of who you are, what you think, what you want your kids to know, because there's no guarantee you'll be here tomorrow. You know, what do you die today? What do your kids want to, what do you want them to know about you? How you think about things, how you think about money and work and religion and all the important things that the kids struggle with because you've never done that. The client's been with me about 15 years now in Guatemala. He owns the three biggest clubs in Guatemala, or his clubs. And he, a very, very cool guy. But he takes this book, and then his daughter's 13, so they read one chapter a week, and then they talk about it. So one chapter was respect. And he says, this is how I feel about it. This is how I live. This is how I treat people. And then he asked her that. And then they write letters sitting there, each other, and then they put them in a book. And then they seal the book, and the book goes in the box. And when she's older, these letters will be who she was at 13, but who he was at 35 or whatever he is now. So there's stuff like that where you got to think about who you are and what you want your kids to think of you. And then if you're in the fitness business, the Making More Money book would be a good one. But I don't do a lot of the consulting anymore. You know, if people have interest, just, you know, I'll do another interview and answer questions or something. Get back to me. You know, in that case, I'd be happy to help you on that. At this stage of my life, new clients is not something I'm really looking at. You get a bunch of guys down there. I'll come and do a workshop for you some afternoon or something. We'll get them all together and then we'll go out and have beer and stand in the sun and talk about it, you know?
That sounds like a plan to me. Well, absolutely. And if you are in the fitness business, Thomas Plummer is someone you want to pay attention to if you want to build a successful business, a business that does everything that Tom talked about in this interview. And I would love to have you back on, Tom. And if you're listening right now, you have some questions for Tom, hit me up. We'll do a repeat of this interview and get Tom back and ask him the questions. And I would love to talk, so much to ask you about. I would love to dive deeper into business, perhaps, and leadership and, you know, and what you just brought up, which could open up a whole other can of worms, but like where society is today, the mentality of society, and perhaps how we can best equip ourselves mindset wise to not be that kid who gets so upset when they hear the trigger words. But for now, everyone has so much to chew on, and I'll have the links to all those books that you mentioned, all the resources, including your books as well, in the show notes for this episode. Thomas Plummer, thank you so much for your knowledge, your wisdom, and most importantly, your time, because that is the one non-renewable resource, and you shared it generously today as well as life-changing information. Do you have any final words?
No, thank you very much. I enjoyed it. These conversations, at this stage, this is fine. I always enjoy these because you get to talk about things you normally don't get to talk a lot about. You know, you can talk about clients and talk to clients, but actually to talk about the process, I kind of enjoy that. So it'd be an honor to be on your show anytime, TR. Let me know.
You got it. Would love to do that again. Well, Tom, looking forward to connecting with you again, and thank you so much.
Take care, man. Thank you.
Wow, what an incredible interview. And it was a long one, so I'm going to make this fairly quick. There's so many things I could recap after this interview, but the most important things that stand out to me were what he said about what we should do in our different decades of our life. And just to recap that, in the 20s, it's the decade of exploration. If you don't know what you want to do, you need to experience, you need to travel the world, you need to try different things, you need to date different people, you need to get experience to teach you what you like, what you don't like, what you want in the world. And school doesn't do that for you. So you must explore in your 20s. And remember what Thomas's mentor said, that the number one thing you need to do to never be out of work is to pick something and focus on that. And that brings us to our 30s, which is you must find meaning, you must find passion in some area of your career, because our careers take up so much of our life. We must find a way to be passionate about it, because if we don't have passion, that leads to mediocrity. And Legendary Life, there's nothing mediocre about that name or what I stand for or what this podcast stands for. So you must find something to focus on. You must find a passion, right? Something that you can do in your field to be the best at it. And in your 40s, it's about mastery. It's about diving as deep as you can into that field, right? And as you heard him explain, it doesn't have to be so focused, or it could be very focused, right? I could be the best public speaker in health and fitness, specifically to people who are out of shape, stressed, busy, etc., right? That's a niche, and that's kind of what my niche is, and that's who I like helping. Think about your niche. What are you mastering in your field? Your 40s, and I'm 39, I'm not quite in my 40s, but I feel like I'm on that path to mastery. I feel like in one way, I'm ahead of people who are years older than me. You know, maybe, but in some ways, like in the wealth way, I feel like I'm years behind, which brings us to the 50s and 60s, which is to create wealth. You must create wealth, as Thomas Plummer said, or you will be working for the rest of your life. Now, there's always a way to change things, but it's going to be hard. Why not plan now? Why not do things now? Why not set yourself up now? Don't be the guy, like Thomas talked about, who was making $750,000 a year, but he was blowing it all on expensive cars, on houses, on whatever, on these things that aren't investments, and he only has $100,000 to his name. even though he's been making an incredible income. So if you're in your 50s and your 60s, that's the time to create wealth, to amass wealth. And then in your 60s and 70s, it's about giving back. It's about doing something that benefits others because you have been so successful. And think about a charity, a cause that you're passionate about. And you know, if you're young, this is going to be way ahead, right? If you're in your 20s, you're still exploring, you don't know yet, that's okay. But also, the last thing I want to say is let Tom's breakdown give you permission to embrace those decades and embrace those ideas for each decade, right? And this is not set in stone, but embrace those ideas and think about where you are. And like I said, I feel like I'm ahead as far as mastery, but I think I'm behind on wealth because of some of the changes I've made and some of the tragedies I've been through have kind of wiped me out. But it's important for us to be aware, and it's important for us to understand our strengths and our weaknesses. So ask yourself, where are you? And lastly, as I said in the beginning, if you want to master your health, I will be doing a webinar on exercise, on showing you visually. I mean, you're going to be blown away when I show you the visuals that explain the concepts that I talk about on this podcast and how you can get better results. And if you want to be part of that, which I would love for you to be part of it, and so we could communicate, because you will have the ability to ask questions, go to legendarylifepodcast.com. Right at the top of the website, you'll see a bar. It will say sign up for the webinar. That's where you sign up for it. And looking forward to seeing you on that webinar. In the meantime, have an awesome week and take this to heart. Think about where you are. Think about your life and go crush it.